It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Thursday, November 30th. And
we need more women and more young people. The average age of the current cabinet is 68. We have no representation of young people.
That was one reaction to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's new cabinet. And a new report issued for World AIDS Day today says that more men than women are dying from the disease.
Good evening. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Mike Hove on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Zimbabwe's new cabinet brings little change to the political landscape. While some members of the public still hope that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's lineup could bring needed reforms, others say the cabinet offers no fresh ideas. Reporter Kudzai Zunawashe has more from Harare.
Briggs Bomba is with the Citizen Manifesto, an initiative that curates and represents the citizens' vision of a better Zimbabwe.
We are totally disappointed in so-called new cabinet. In fact, our starting point is that there is nothing new. The very same dead wood of ministers whose legacy is failure, corruption and incompetence has been recycled. As such, Zimbabweans cannot expect any fresh thinking or any miraculous deeds.
He adds that President Mnangagwa has failed to live up to his earlier pledge of a smaller government.
Mnangagwa has failed to come through with his promise to reduce the size of cabinet. The last Mugabe cabinet had 26 ministers, so you can't talk of a historic shrinking of cabinet, which is what we needed, and you just move from 26 to 22.
Other critics note that the cabinet has fewer women and younger people. The appointment of two senior Defence Forces members also has raised concerns over the size of the military role in government. Bomba also says Mnangagwa has failed to tap into the spirit of inclusivity because he did not name technocrats and members of the civic society and opposition to his cabinet. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parley, an online news site that has citizen journalists reporting from parliament and other political events. He has a vision for an ideal cabinet.
12 ministers. We don't need 22 ministers. Where do we need 22 ministers? 12 ministers, and there needs to be a perfect balance that meets the obligations of the Constitution. The Constitution says that there has to be a gender balance. And right now we have 3 women out of 22. We need more women and more young people. The average age of the current cabinet is 68. We have no representation of young people.
Despite the familiar names on the cabinet, political and economic analyst Vince Musewe is hopeful.
My view is that I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to be negative. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to trust him, and I'm going to focus on the vision that he has articulated to get this economy going. And he has 10 months to prove it. But personally, I'll give him 100 days.
Some critics, such as Dodo, also say they worry that Mnangagwa's decision to retain the cybersecurity division indicates the government has not given up the repressive tendencies of President Robert Mugabe's rule. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
President Mnangagwa's new cabinet is dominating talk in Zimbabwe. His picks include 2 military generals, former ZANU-PF ministers, and only 3 women. Here to discuss the implications of the new cabinet is our colleague from VOA Zimbabwe service, Evans Zuniga. Welcome, Evans.
Thank you.
So, Evans, let's get into this, buddy. He's 2 picks, both from the military. What does this mean for Zimbabwe? What does it mean with regards to, you know, there was talks of a whole military coup, military takeover, the whole talks of a military state? What does this mean when we have 2 military individuals, both seniors, now part of the ministerial cabinet?
It's a very exciting situation right now, and like you probably know by now, there's a lot of mixed feelings about this whole scenario. Mm-hmm. But I'll be quick to point out that we need to understand that President Mnangagwa is coming from a zone where he also has to pay his dues for what he has done.
Yeah, you know?
Mm-hmm. That includes paying tribute to the few that stood by him. Mm-hmm. And Brigadier Moyo and Air Marshal Shiri were there in the moment when they needed him, when he needed them most. Mm-hmm. So I feel he probably needs to show some homage and pay some tribute to them. Mm-hmm. However, from a political perspective, the army rightly should stay in the military and let politicians run the show. It's going to be exciting to see how it goes. Mm-hmm.
But on that note, bringing in the military but leaving out any person who is younger than the average of 68, what does that really mean about the future of Zimbabwe? Are they bringing in young people? Are young people having a voice in this government?
It's very, very sensitive for the youth. I was talking to some few young people earlier today, and their sentiments are very, very worrying because besides the huge call for the youth to come and participate in the new Zimbabwe and the new government and in all these structures, come and vote, let's go rally behind Zimbabwe, but then there is not even one youth to represent them in the cabinet, the youth are not happy. Definitely.
And how are women feeling? I mean, there's only three women out of a cabinet of, I believe, 22. How are they feeling about that?
That definitely is going to be noise because they are not happy about it. It's you know, the gender equality story that Zimbabwe has been preaching has definitely not been paid attention to. And for just 3 out of 22, that's a cause for concern.
So tell me something. How is this then looking for President Emmerson Mnangagwa? I mean, we're headed towards an election. Early on, I heard someone talking about this could be a strategy because, you know, when you come with new people, it comes with packages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this could possibly be a way for him to just keep the same people and just move forward with the idea of generating new resources to feed them to do the job they should know how to do.
It could be true because definitely we've got to look at it from both sides of the coin. Some people share the view that bringing in like a whole new crew altogether is going to be costly, training, adjustment, and everything. But at the same time, some other people have the view that he should have taken this opportunity to show that he's coming with the change that people have been waiting for. Because as it stands right now, he has just reshuffled the same old people, and there is no sign of a new life that's coming on board.
But what change were people asking for? What change were they looking forward to?
It's very funny. If people were thinking that all the noise the army was making and the people were marching for on the street was to get rid of just Robert Mugabe, then they must have been mistaken because it's a regime. It's a total regime change. And a lot of people right now, especially the opposition parties, they would be very, very sinister with the idea of changing the whole cabinet and coming in with a whole bunch of new people.
So now with this all happening, where does the opposition come into play? Where do they fit into this whole picture?
The opposition have just gained momentum. If I were to say my thoughts on this, they've just gained ground because now they have more points to say to people as they campaign. They have more reason to show that there is need for change because this cabinet doesn't show any form of change.
On a different note, in President Mnangagwa's speech, he emphasized the economy. Is he really putting any extra attention in the economy by putting in an MP who presided over the economy when it stagnated and there was no job creation?
I wouldn't say yes to that because definitely you want to see new life coming in. You want to see new ideas. You want to see new faces and hear new voices. So definitely there's a lot that he needs to do to give that confidence in the people and the business sector that there is change coming their way.
Thank you very much for joining us, Evans Ninga.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Njani mahlabe zulu linjani zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la ngo 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi athi 909 meter wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele
land of sunshine.
President Mnangagwa's cabinet is a hot topic on social media. Many posts wonder if instead of moving forward, the new cabinet means politics as usual. User Ed Joseph said, "The issue is not about the opposition being in cabinet. This issue is the Mnangagwa cabinet is full of incompetent and corrupt individuals who have served as cabinet ministers before, unsuccessfully. They had years and years to fix the economy, but they failed dismally." At BT Shadaya says, "When you are fishing from a pool full of frogs, how on earth are you expected to catch fish?" Others had a more positive outlook. As Sadisti said, "Why can't you give the coup cabinet a chance? The people of Zimbabwe wanted a change for better or worse. I'm sure this cool is well received, better than ZANU-PF's democratic landslide victory of 2013. If the cabinet can butter our bread, we are done." Etemba Mlisiwa says, "Let us give them a chance in these 8 months."
I want the freest environment possible for the press in Zimbabwe.
That is Chris Muchanga, the leader of the Veterans Association, who is now the new Minister for Information, Media, and Broadcasting. The former journalist today spoke with VOA Zimbabwe reporter Tinotenda Huande about the future of media in Zimbabwe. Media freedom in Zimbabwe has been severely restricted by laws that give the information minister the power to decide which publications can operate legally and who can work as a journalist. Other laws limit what journalists can publish. Mutsanga says he would throw those laws out the window.
"I want to professionalize the journalism and reporting profession, whether it be electronic or whether it be print media or whether it be, you know, the new media, all of it. And I want to ask, I want to put technology,
He also wants to make sure journalists have all the technological tools they need. The nonviolent removal of President Robert Mugabe, Mutsanga says, shows the spirit of the Zimbabwean people and how valuable education and information are. The new minister says no one has the right to tell the Zimbabwean people what they should think, and the media should give unbiased information and allow people to come to their own conclusions.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Mike Horvitt in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa. At 42 past the hour, we continue with our news report.
VOA's Zimbabwe service yesterday brought together our Zimbabwean political activists for a discussion here in Washington, D.C. It was a lively debate on the way forward for the country. Here are some of the comments from our panelists.
Businessman Den Moyo is the chairman of the opposition MDCT in the United States. He says a better future starts with fair elections, which he says haven't happened in the past. He also wants to make sure the government is civilian run.
The reason that they have not been free, fair, and credible is because the situation on the ground has not allowed for that. We need a new independent electoral body. That is the trust of all the stakeholders. The current one does not have the trust of all the stakeholders. It is not independent. We need the UN supervision of the elections. We cannot continue counting on ZANU-PF's friends to come and monitor the elections and decide that they were free and fair. We need an impartial body, somebody who's independent, to come in and do that. We cannot afford Zimbabwe to be a military state. We need the military confined to the barracks where they belong, as per our constitution.
Dr. Frank Nguni is an expert on HIV/AIDS, and he's studying forensic pathology in the United States. He's also a lifelong member of ZANU-PF. He pushes back on the idea that the electoral board is flawed, but says the party is eager for fair elections.
What has been the biggest impediment right now is that the Electoral Act of Zimbabwe is not properly aligned with the new constitution, and that's a fundamental reform that needs to happen before the elections. and as soon as possible. And I can assure you that from a Zanu-PF perspective and from the new government, that's a top priority to ensure that our elections are run in accordance with the law. And for that matter, it's not the electoral body that goes and votes. Their job is to simply run the elections and count the votes. It's the people of Zimbabwe that vote. Unlike our comrades from the opposition, ZANU-PF right now is very busy pushing our people to go and register so that they can go and vote. That's a fundamental thing that needs to be done. Instead of criticizing the electoral body, mobilize your voters, mobilize your supporters to go and register so that they can go and vote.
Rutendo Mudzamiri is pursuing a doctorate in strategic leadership. She's also the director and founder of the Women to Watch Network, a women's leadership forum that focuses on the issues of Zimbabwe's young women. She says younger Zimbabweans must turn out to vote to determine the country's future.
There were elections in the last elections that we had. We went all over Zimbabwe and we saw how young people were willing to be the voice in both political parties, but there's still voter apathy. They're not interested in then going to vote. So we cannot talk about a free and fair election as well if young people are just all talk and they're not willing to vote. And I will still respond to you. Young people in ZANU-PF do not vote. Young people in ZANU-PF just go for these rallies. They go for functions, most of them. It's only a selected few. It's only a few that have the knowledge and understand the power of their vote that then go and register to vote. I didn't know that I could vote until maybe I was in my 20s, and I didn't know why I needed to vote. But then I know so many other young people when in their 30s were not willing to vote. So for young people to actually complete this transition, which is what I've been saying from the beginning, we need to know the power of our voice. We need to know the power of our vote. And we need to be willing to not be all talk, but to be open to what MDC has to offer, to what ZANU-PF has to offer, and take everything with a pinch of salt, or at least take everything with an open mind so that we're not just going to say yes.
Ambassador Chiombo Rikwao, who is from Zimbabwe, is the African Union's top diplomat in Washington. She has little patience with those who are already criticizing the country's new government. She urges patience as Zimbabwe moves forward.
Let's give this government a chance to show us what they're capable of doing before we start destroying something that hasn't even been created. And then what? What is the way forward? Let's be mature and responsible about how we begin to look at ourselves, not only as Zimbabweans, but as a mature African continent. We need to look at the situation independently, and at this time, we must support Zimbabwe fully, we must support this government fully, and see what they can deliver in the next 8 months, and let the Zimbabweans decide on their own, come 8 months, whether they want ZANU-PF or any of the other opposition parties.
A new report issued on World AIDS Day finds more men than women are dying from AIDS because fewer men get tested for the fatal disease or have access to treatment. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNAIDS headquarters in Geneva.
The report finds men have what it calls a blind spot when it comes to getting tested for HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. And if they do not know their HIV status, the report says men are unlikely to get treatment and will die. UNAIDS says the situation is particularly acute in sub-Saharan Africa, where men and boys living with HIV are 20% less likely than HIV-positive women and girls to know their status. The report says even larger numbers are less likely to seek treatment and warns that people who are not being treated are more likely to transmit the AIDS virus. While more women are likely to be living with HIV, more men are likely to die from this fatal disease, says Peter Gies, the chief strategy officer at UNAIDS. He says the reason is that fewer men than women receive antiretroviral therapy, citing a figure of 47% for men compared to 60% for women.
Then also once people are on treatment, we find that men are actually less likely to be fully observant or adherent to their treatment. And so it results actually in higher mortality of men living with HIV than women in living with HIV. And so about 58% of all the AIDS-related deaths that were observed in 2016 are occurring among men, even though there are more women living with HIV.
Global trends on the HIV/AIDS epidemic are generally positive. New data show AIDS-related deaths have declined by nearly half since a peak in 2005. But the epidemic is far from over. UNAIDS reports nearly 2 million people worldwide became newly affected with HIV last year, and more than 1 million people died from AIDS-related illnesses. The report shows fewer men than women visit healthcare facilities and so are less likely to be diagnosed with life-threatening conditions. It says many men avoid getting tested because they fear being stigmatized by knowing their HIV status. Many others, it says, refrain from receiving life-saving treatment because they believe they are invincible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now for an important bit of sports news. Morocco and Tunisia both face tough competition in their World Cup groupings next year. The World Cup, drawing today in Moscow, places Tunisia in Group G with England, Belgium and Panama. Morocco lands in Group B with traditional football powerhouses Portugal and Spain, as well as Iran. Egypt plays in Group A with Russia, Saudi Arabia and Uruguay. Nigeria, back for its sixth World Cup appearance, most of any African nation, faces Argentina, Ireland, and Croatia in Group D. Senegal rounds out the African representation at next year's Summer World Cup. It faces Poland, Colombia, and Japan in Group H.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 shortwave, 15580 shortwave, ne 6080 shortwave, mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
Thousands of birds that normally migrate to Africa during the colder months are now making Israel their final winter destination. Asian avian experts say climate change is to blame and human interaction with the various species is more critical than ever. VOA's Robert Raffaele explains.
In Israel's Hula Valley, thousands of cranes are now making the wetlands their temporary winter home rather than continuing their annual voyage to the African plains. The reason? Environmental experts blame climate change. Shea Agmon is the avian coordinator of the wetlands park of Agamon Hula, where workers are monitoring and feeding the birds. He says increasing drought conditions across Africa are drawing multiple species to the park's cooler, more lush climate.
Every bird species trying to get from the north of us, from Central and Eastern Europe and Western Asia to Africa, had to cross over here and used to stop here just for short stopovers to gain weight, to gain food, to gain strength. Today, the deserts are just way longer, way bigger than it used to be.
Zoology professor Yossi Leshem of Tel Aviv University says this change in migration directly impacts farmers.
These small birds, they go in the fields in Europe and they eat the insects which are making damage to the agriculture. If they are not there, they have to use more pesticide. You use more pesticide, you pay more money, and then we are not only killing the bird, you are killing the people.
Shea Agmon says the birds' increasingly northern migration means a more crucial role for humans.
From now on, almost every aspect of nature conservation would be almost always in the hands of human beings. We'll have to deal with it all the time. We'll be in charge of the health and wellness of every species around us.
Agmon says since the 1950s, the number of birds that have preferred to stay in Israel until late March has risen substantially. Robert Rafael, VOA News.
The United Nations is appealing for a record $22.5 billion to provide humanitarian assistance to 91 million victims of conflict and natural disasters in 2018. We have Lisa Schlein again reporting from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The UN is launching its biggest ever appeal in response to a growing number of complex humanitarian emergencies. Mark Lowcock is the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. He says the money will be used to give tens of millions of the world's most vulnerable people food, shelter, health care, emergency education, protection and other essential relief next year.
The big drivers of humanitarian need for 2018 will continue to be conflict and violence, which forces people to flee from their homes, denies them access to adequate food, and robs them of their livelihoods.
Lowcock says the appeal also will be used to provide aid to victims of typhoons, hurricanes, and other natural disasters. But he says Yemen, Syria, and Democratic Republic of Congo, home of the world's three biggest crises, will receive most of the aid. He says Yemen, the world's largest humanitarian crisis, is in a particularly precarious state. That is because of the blockade imposed on the country by Saudi Arabia following a missile attack on the Saudi capital Riyadh, November 6th, by Houthi rebels.
We've been calling for full unwinding of the blockade, which has been preventing humanitarian assistance and commercial food and fuel get into Yemen. It needs to be fully wound down if we're to avoid an atrocious humanitarian tragedy involving the loss of millions of lives, the like of which the world has not seen for many decades.
Lowcock says needs next year will remain at exceptionally high levels in Nigeria and South Sudan, and humanitarian crises are expected to grow in Burundi and Cameroon. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Mike Hobe. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Debele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Debele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.
And now we leave you with a song by Military Touch, Cheke Che.
Ability extension. Give me one from the regional. Give me the beat and the drum and the mix, you know. Everyone has to dance to the beat, you know. Let your soul and your heart beat, you know. You better show me some love, cause I really don't know. Jingo macha ida hundo. Show me some love. Show me some love, cause I really don't know. Jingo macha ida hundo. Everybody repeat this line. Step to the line.
Kushika shungu zapera Tipe ongoma Vana mukoma Kudikitira Kushika shungu zapera From there to the toe To the spirit and soul I've come alive again Ndisi endiende Ndisi endiende Chungoma chaka nyenya Chino daka kungen sobo dia